how have drones, UAV, you know, unmanned aerial systems, unmanned aerial vehicles, how has this whole technology changed the construction?
How it is now with drones is you can collect all that data and you can pull it up at almost any given point in time and make a decision on that data.
Hey, this is Forrest with Concrete Conversations. Today we had an amazing Concrete Conversations podcast episode with Jeremiah Wong, who is known as the Sun Wukong of UAS. If you don't know what that is, go look it up like I had to. You'll see it on his headline on LinkedIn. We did a cool podcast with him talking about drones, UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. We talked about specializing in a vertical. We talked about, which drone to buy. We talked about the impact of drones on the construction, you know, the AEC industry. It was a great conversation, highly informative. Jeremiah has this rich background in lots of different aspects of the industry. You're going to love this one. Make sure to follow, don't stalk, but follow Jeremiah on LinkedIn and anywhere else you can find that guy. And make sure to follow the channel. You're going to like this. Okay, so Jeremiah, we're going to jump right into getting into some questions here. First, can you tell me what is a drone service provider, or what that term means? And I'll give you some context for the question here. There are plenty of people that I've talked to who have said that they don't understand the term because they think of that as like analogous to being called a hammer service provider. You know, like a framer, he's not a hammer service provider. A hammer is just one tool that he uses. So what does it even mean to be a drone service provider? I know that that's not what you do, but you work with drone service providers all the time. Can you help me unpack what this really even means?
What I would say it really means is just you do provide services, but there are a lot of different pretty much professions within that. And within those professions, it gets even deeper and deeper and deeper. So in terms of a drone service provider, you could be like a videographer and you can do great videos and pictures, or you can be on the side where I am, which is more on the aerial surveying and mapping side, to provide those services and things like that. It's a little bit more than just going out and flying. So when I think about drone service providers, I generally don't think about, you know, a guy buying like a Mavic and going out and doing a wedding every so often, or just, you know, shooting a couple random things. When I think of drone service providers, I think of ones where that is pretty much all they do. And their main task is to go out, fly, collect data, come back, and provide a professional service as something more than just like a side hobby or more than just a supplement. It is your entire career in a way when I think about a drone service provider. I think it's just a little bit more deep than just what the average person or average person you would talk to on the street would think about when you go, hey, I fly drones for a living. It's kind of like when digital SLRs came out and everyone all of a sudden was a photographer. And that's where things are, I feel like, right now with drones, is that you have people who do it for just the joy and the fun, and then there are the people who do it who rely on it. And that's when you say drone service provider, I think more on the side of people who make it their career as opposed to people who make it as a way to pick up, you know, some additional money, like a side hustle kind of thing. So it just goes a little bit deeper and just shows, I guess, in a way, more dedication towards a particular thing or profession.
Well, and you were mentioning there in the beginning of your explanation of what this term means, that a drone service provider could be a very broad term within which numerous verticals, numerous categories of profession can fit. There can be purely. And I think of this kind of bifurcating into these two areas of pretty pictures / videos and data. And the data can be all sorts of kinds, all kinds of data. But they're kind of, if you're a drone service provider, you're kind of doing one or the other, maybe both, maybe some of both. But do you see that differently at all in terms of how to generally categorize drone service providers?
At this point in time, it really does feel like there are the two categories. There are the people who go out to take the nice, pretty pictures and videos, and then there are the people who put them, I guess, it sounds neat to say, like, the ones who put them to work, but then the people who take the videos and stuff put them to work too, just in a different manner. I guess it's more of a collaboration on the other side. It's more of a collaboration. So when I think drone service providers and things like that, I think of not only is it just the guy who takes the video, but the guy who has to talk to like a project manager, who has to go through and speak to multiple people in order to ensure that the data for the job is where it needs to be, and to tolerances, and to things where there are official like certifications that need to be stamped. So it's either going to be the guys who go out and take the photos or videos and pretty pictures and stuff, or the guys who go into it and make it more, I guess, on the industrial commercial side of things, not just photos and videos, I guess to say. The data is going to be used for more than just photos and videos. Data is going to be extracted out of it, I guess. So I definitely see that there's a big line between the two in the fields that I see.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that makes sense. And I don't think that either of us are denigrating the pretty picture side of this. Frankly, my brother is a professional photographer, and everything that he can do with pictures, with photography is that's equal parts science and art, is as far as I'm concerned. He's just understanding the exposure triangle and understanding how to tell a story while making a picture is quite impressive. But to put it in very simple terms, it's kind of, that's a pretty pictures category. And then there's the other side of, generating orthomosaics or capturing thermal imagery or, using a multispectral sensor or something like that. They're just very different worlds. And like my brother, I don't think that he's too interested as a photographer in collecting thermal imagery, just not his thing. Yeah.
I guess now that I think of it, I would say it's more less than like two sides and more of like a next level, a next step. Because like in aerial surveying and mapping, you still need to know photography. You need to know how to take a pretty picture or else your data is going to be bad, especially in photogrammetry, because everything is still photography. So let's say you have the people who do weddings and things like that. You can do weddings, but then a guy on the other side can technically do weddings, but he's not using his knowledge just for the wedding. He's using that knowledge to supplement that data to be used for more things than just a pretty video or a picture. So I would, I guess now that I would, if I think about it, it's less of a division, but just another level that you end up going to. Because you kind of see that when you look at posts online and everything, where people are just trying to get into the more construction industry, and they're like, yeah, I have a Mavic, I've been flying like videos and things like that, but I really want to get in construction and surveying and things like that. It's kind of like a transition more than a division, I guess, if I think about it a little bit more, if that kind of makes sense. Because, I mean, everyone kind of started off taking out pretty pictures and videos. Like, I started out in FPV, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and so, and you know, let me just interject here. I mean, Jeremiah, you're just such a wealth of information here. I'd recommend that everybody go on LinkedIn, follow Jeremiah Wong. He's on LinkedIn. He's always making interesting posts about things, going to trade shows and sharing what he's finding there. So everybody follow Jeremiah. He's a open book. You've always been very generous to me with just chatting online, and obviously a wealth of information. So everybody make sure to follow Jeremiah. So Jeremiah, you mentioned FPV there. For those who are just getting their feet wet into the world of UAV, unmanned aerial vehicles, what is FPV, and why did you start there?
FPV is short for first person view. So it's the kind of drone flying you do with goggles. So you put the goggles on, you have the controller, and you're flying a little tiny, usually it's just a quad. Most popular ones you see are probably going to be like little tiny cinema whoops or like the racing drones and things like that, where you are pretty much wearing goggles and pretending you're kind of sitting first person in a cockpit on the drone and flying it manually. So you don't have GPS, you don't have, I mean, you have your accelerometers and gyros and everything, but none of that is going in and helping you fly. Now you have the ones like the Avadas and things like that, which are still FPV. It just makes it a lot easier than having to spend, you know, months, if not years, honing skills in terms of being able to fly and do little delicate close-in moves for like FPV flying. So it's more on the fun side of flying when it comes to drones and less of the work side of flying. But it's kind of really interesting now when you start seeing FPV become more of a profession, because when I started it, like, I was buying parts from China and soldering them together, and just, yeah, it's just crazy to see where that side of drones have come. And to where it is now, to where I'm seeing a lot of the stuff that we did starting in FPV, because a lot of the stuff got started because of FPV when it came to drones, because everything started from what, like a Wii controller that was modified. So it's really neat to see the progression from where it started to where it is now, and how like FPV in a lot of ways has influenced the commercial side of things. But yeah, FPV has just been around forever, and it's kind of more on the fun side of things and less on the serious side of things, depending on if you make it a profession or not.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've got a friend of mine who's done a lot of FPV stuff, and I've seen some of his work. He's done a commercial or two, and it's really impressive stuff. It's really amazing what the kinds of shots that you can get through. It's pretty cool. Is that how you, in your experience in working, so you, most of your background has been working with dealers, or, you know, working on the sales or support side of the drone industry, correct? You haven't started up your own drone service providing company, is that correct?
No, I haven't started off I haven't started a drone company or anything. Like, the closest was kind of doing something to do with consulting. Like, for me, I, for like at least the past 10 years, I've just been helping people out. So I want to keep helping people out instead of having to spend all my time on the internet, just doing some side consulting to have just people call. And if they have any questions, just ask them and I'll do what I can to help them out. But that's the closest to me doing something on my own. I don't know. There's a lot of, yeah. No, it's just, there's a lot of like interestingness between like starting off on yourself, like starting off doing something on yourself, or working with another company or working for another company, or either working for an engineering firm or another dealer. The dynamics are really weird and different, because I recently switched jobs and I went through a phase where I was trying to think about what the strengths and weaknesses of working for a drone manufacturer compared to working for a dealer, compared to working for an engineering firm. and all of them have positives and all of them have benefits, but I ended up wanting to work for another dealer again, because when you get to work for a dealer, you get to play with all the toys, I guess. And when you end up working for a manufacturer, you kind of only get to work with the manufacturer's toys. Or when you work for a civil engineering company or an engineering company, you only get to play with what they buy. So depending on what route you want to go or where you see you or what your strengths and weaknesses are, it really just depends which way you want to go or who you want to work for if you want to do something with someone else.
Well, and that's part of why I was really interested in talking with you, because you have such a wide background in working for dealers and seeing surely many people who have gone down this road, either as solopreneurs or as, you know, larger civil engineering firms or architectural firms, or just all sorts of different sizes and types of companies who are getting into this UAV world and, you know, having to develop their own UAS system or, you know, programs and such. And I'd be very interested to know what you've seen in terms of especially for the smaller companies who are trying to break into this world. Have you noticed any distinct patterns of success or components to those plans that have generated successful outcomes? And alternatively, any patterns that have really just crashed and burned? When you do X, Y, and Z, it leads to success, or X, Y, and Z, it leads to failure.
And what I've seen consistently is if you want to start a drone business, but you go in it thinking you can do everything that a drone can do, it usually doesn't work out too well, because you're not specializing, you're not learning about a particular thing or how to do something really, really well or how to do it right. The ones where I've spoken to and like I've sold equipment to customers where they go in and they buy like a P1, so a photogrammetry sensor, an L1 for LiDAR, and they buy like an H20 and for like thermal and inspections and things like that. And then they go out and advertise for all of it, like public safety, aerial mapping, like videography and things like that. And there's no specialization, and they're kind of just getting whatever they can get. And I mean, in the beginning, they just spread too thin, and they never get really good at one thing, and they never really push towards one thing. And they just end up struggling because they're taking whatever they can get. Whereas the companies where I'd say, like the smaller engineering companies that go in, or the smaller guys who want to go in specifically for like aerial mapping, they generally do really well because all they care about is mapping. They don't care about focusing on picking up inspections or like contacting the local PD to see if they need help or things like that. It's just focusing on what you want to do and do it well before you start moving on to different disciplines. Because a lot of people that you work with are smart. Like a lot of people that I speak to are engineers. Like they go to years and years of schooling. So again, depending on your client, like you have to know what you're talking about, and you have to know about it in detail, because a lot of these guys can call you out, and it's definitely very uncomfortable when you're in the middle of a demo or you're in the middle of talking to someone or a customer and they call you out on something and you can't really say anything back. So it's just, if the biggest thing for me is just focus on something, get good at it, then move on. Because the ones who do everything all at once, just they struggle way too much, because they're always spread too thin, and they're always just trying to figure out what they can do next and what's better. So focus, I think, is key, definitely in starting a business.
Yeah, that's really wise. You know, spreading yourself too thin as a small business owner, I know all about spreading yourself thin and, you know, trying to spin too many plates, and you've only got so many hands and so many places where you can split your attention, and you do that too much, and It's just, it's not a question of if, but when you're going to have one or two or a dozen of those plates just come crashing to the ground. So yeah, I can definitely understand that. I've definitely lived that. You know, Jeremiah, I wanted to ask you about mentorship also. What, my experience, most people, most professionals, regardless of the industry, really have had mentorship being a very important part of their progression through their profession. What role has mentorship played for you? Have you had opportunities to be mentored or to mentor others who have been in your shoes just years ago?
In terms of mentors, I would say the closest thing to the mentors I had are the people that I worked with. Like a lot of people that I work with, I mean, I don't have a bachelor's. I have an associate's in fine arts. I didn't go to school or anything. I worked my butt off to get where I am. And I have to thank all the people along the way. Like when I say like mentors, it's kind of like when I worked at DLZ, I had like a guy, Tony, like I went to him for questions. He was an LS. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know survey at all. Like I barely knew any of this stuff. And going to the guys that I worked with, the guys who have the experience, those are the closest things to the mentors that I had. But I never really had a specific guy to talk to, mainly because there really wasn't too many people doing the things I'm doing. So there wasn't, like, especially when I started back when Part 107 wasn't even a thing, like the closest thing to a mentor was like random chat groups online where you could never find the answer, but you find all the guys with the same issues. But in terms of mentoring other people, I definitely can say that I would say I've definitely mentored a decent amount of people, and I try to continue to do that and spread the experiences that I have as best as I can to everyone who wants it. And I try and be honest, and I try and, you know, not like be all salesy and preachy and things like that. I just do what I can to help whoever needs help. So like the whole deal with me starting like the side consulting firm and things like that is specifically just so if anyone needs help, if anyone needs something to go to or a question they can't find an answer to, like shoot me an email, like make an appointment for a call. Like I'll talk for like 45 minutes and maybe we can figure out your issue. Because in the end, I knew what it was like to not have anyone to go to for answers. And if I can help you out and give you that answer and just make a lot of stress go away, like I'm more than happy to do it. And I do what I can. So, and I've done it for years. So like the whole mentor and advice and things like that, yeah, it's important. But I can't really say I have a specific people who've mentored me. I've just had a lot of people in my life who's given me help and influence for sure. It's like that's the biggest thing too, is just you can have a mentor or you don't even know you have a mentor. People can be mentors to you. Like anyone can be a mentor to you, but the biggest issue that everyone generally has is just asking for that help. Like you can't have a mentor if you don't, you know, admit to yourself that you need help doing something, you need advice on how to do something. So asking the question or just making yourself go ask for help is like the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because you're not always going to be seldom in life do you have a situation where somebody steps into your life and says, I will mentor you through this thing. It more often than not, you have to have some proactivity in going and seeking help from others, whether or not you're thinking this person is going to be a mentor or not. You just, that ability and resolve to ask questions and be inquisitive. I just don't know if there's anything more important than that. So I think that's some very sound advice, Jeremiah. I appreciate that. Wanted to shift gears here slightly. The podcast is very much focused on the AEC industry, right? Architecture, engineering, and construction, and kind of the different facets of it. We've talked with salesmen in the AEC industry and other service providers of varying sorts. wanted to see what you could tell us about how drones and unmanned aerial vehicles of all kinds have changed the architecture, engineering, construction landscape. What impact have they had over the time that you've been involved with UAVs?
Documentation, like archiving of data, like it's changed a lot, because you can go out and fly and get an ortho of a job site in less than an hour, and you can process that data and get a photo out of it in less than 2 hours if you really want to push for it. So being able to get up-to-date information of any job site at any given point in time, I think that's changed the game a lot for a lot of companies, and to be able to see the differences over time. One of the first jobs I had was at a company called United Conveyor, and I did, this wasn't even in drones, this was conveyor and service piping design. So they did coal fire power plants, but another story altogether. But there, like, when I worked there, they got their first LiDAR scanner. Just terrestrial-based scanner, but it changed how they did their business, because they would go to power plants, scan the power plants, and model directly out of the point cloud. So that changed everything, because when you go and you get a scan, or you go and you fly something, that is a snapshot of that thing in that given time. So if you design something off that one thing, and it gets installed, and you go back and do another scan, or you go back, or someone gives you a call and say it doesn't fit, you can go straight to that point cloud, straight at that point in time. You're like, I made this, I built this, I designed this off of this scan. If this is different than what it was before, then it's not my fault. It's not my problem, because you guys changed something. So being able to help prevent back charges, to find accountability and things like that, I think that's where drones have made a huge impact, and technology in general has made a huge impact in the way we do things, because in a lot of ways it's harder to hide things. It's easier to keep track of things. I mean, another thing where, like, it's kind of changed, it's just collecting of data. It's made field guys' lives easier. I wouldn't say it's, a lot of people in the beginning were like, it's going to go through and eliminate like a field surveyor's job, and it does nothing of that. It just enables them to do more work with not having to expend as much energy and do it in a more safe manner. So I know a lot of guys were extremely happy when they had to go topo like a gigantic mall parking lot, and they would have to walk the entire thing, and I came by with my drone and flew it in an hour and pulled topo points out of it. So they didn't have to spend an entire day walking a blacktop parking lot topoing it when I just flew it for them. So it definitely helps a lot in supplementing of the data. It helps a lot in making the lives of the field guys easier. And it helps, I would say it's changed a lot in terms of back charges and costs and things like that, because you can go back and you can get certain accountabilities, and you can figure things out from the data that you collect, especially if you archive it. Especially like in AEC, like I feel that right now it's in the AEC, like BIM side of things, like drones and just the entire technology area going towards it is definitely starting to boom. Especially now you see like RCN, the Reality Capture Network, that kind of popped out of nowhere in the past like year or something. Like, I didn't really see them too much. They have giant booths and everything now. But like, everything's for reality capture now. Everything is for going through and melding survey data, terrestrial data, mobile LiDAR, aerial LiDAR, and generating digital twins and reality meshes. And I just think we're just starting to see it. And I think in a few more years, we're going to see it used a lot more once more people and more programs come out that are able to combine like multiple disciplines of data sets together.
Yeah. We actually had Matt Bird on the podcast recently from Reality Capture Network. We had Matt Bird on. Yeah. And we had a great discussion about all of this also. How have drones, UAV, you know, unmanned aerial systems, unmanned aerial vehicles, how has this whole technology changed the construction AEC industry as a whole? I personally haven't seen it replace people's jobs. As you were stating earlier, I've seen it increase efficiencies, increase transparency. I haven't seen it wholesale, like make people go unemployed, like the automobile did to the horse and buggy or something. I don't see that happening at all here. What's your take?
I used to work in a lot of mills, and I've flown a bunch of mines and things like that. And so I got to see perspectives on two sides, the people who supply like ore to mills that use that ore. On the mill end of side of things, I used to fly for Volumetrics, and I worked for one where they transitioned from manned aerial to unmanned or uncrewed. And we found that when you compare the two data sets, the drone data, since it was flown a lot lower and it's a lot more detailed, you would see like up to like 20% decreases in the volumes compared to manned aerial. And something like that was a big enough issue to cause problems where they would call their supplier and say, you're not giving us enough material, or you're giving us too much material. And I think it definitely, in a lot of ways, changed that whole field in terms of how they collect their data and how they calculate their volumetric and things like that. It's definitely changed a lot, because I definitely see a lot more mining companies utilize them now, as opposed to utilizing manned aerial to do those kinds of things. So it's changed a lot, especially in a lot of ways to verify data.
Yeah, that's really interesting. With the volumetrics, especially, that's a thing that's, in the past you had to hike all around and above and on that pile with the survey pole just to be able to calculate all that. And now in a really quick flight and a little bit of processing of the data afterwards, you can come up with a pretty accurate measurement of that stockpile. That's pretty phenomenal. It's pretty cool how much that's increased efficiency there. I wanted to ask a little bit about, you know, we're talking a little around what's happening now with construction, with the AEC industry. What are you seeing on the horizon in terms of just your personal opinion of trends that are going? I know you've attended GeoWeek, you've attended Commercial UAV Expo, surely other trade shows in the past. I wanted to get your input on what's on the horizon that's going to be, again, increasing efficiency, decreasing errors, increasing transparency, and just in general, making life easier for the construction trades.
Yeah, there are so many changes happening. I mean, there are big changes and little changes. Like a lot of the changes right now that I'm seeing is you're getting a lot more higher quality, higher megapixel cameras. You're getting a lot more LiDAR sensors that are more affordable, but also we're getting ones that are a lot more accurate with a lot more points on the ground. One of the big things that I see, especially in the civil side of things and construction side of things, is to do with like curb and gutter. One of the biggest things was doing line work and extracting curb and gutter, because there's really no other way to do it than using mobile LiDAR or driving down the street or walking it and shooting those three points. Now we're starting to get into the point where LiDAR is good enough and LiDAR is accurate enough to where you can pull curb and gutter out of LiDAR now. And that's kind of insane to think about, because that is one of the biggest things that is a pain in the butt to have to do out in the field. And that's something that we can start doing now within drone data. the whole idea of like the whole digital twins thing and being able to collect all that data from multiple different sensors and combine all of it together to generate like a one-to-one copy of what's really out there, the whole reality mesh, digital twins again. I feel like that is what is on the horizon, and that's what we're all starting to work to. We're starting to definitely see like the survey side of things work together with the drone side of things now a lot more, so things are getting a lot more accurate. We're seeing bigger companies like Trimble and Leica and all of these companies come out and support the drone side of things and come out with things that help make the data more accurate. It's coming to a point where we're definitely going to see more of the digital twins, reality capture, and combining all of the different disciplines together to generate like one big master live copy of whatever's out there. And that's kind of really cool and really interesting to see. When I started out, I was modeling in AutoCAD. I was a CAD jockey, 2D modeling, red lines and things like that. And then doing 3D stuff within AutoCAD. So just turning 2D drawings into 3D models and sticking that into like Navisworks and other programs in order to generate things. And now we have programs like Revit and like, it's not context capture anymore, but programs like this where you no longer have to spend all that time like hand modeling it. You can use this data and you can use all these things to help you get what you need done in a lot quicker and efficient manner, I guess to say.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just the efficiencies brought about by unmanned aerial systems is just a game changing, truly. One thing that I wanted to ask about, and this might be one of our final questions here, is just thinking to our target audience is really the new professional in the AEC industry, those who are just coming into the industry, trying to get their feet wet, trying to figure out what they like, what they see. They might see a guy like Jeremiah Wong and see you and think like, this is a guy who's got a lot of things together that I want to get together. I want to see where he is. I want to follow him. And you should, if you're watching this podcast, then you should absolutely go on LinkedIn, follow Jeremiah in as many places as you can, short of stalking him. Don't stalk Jeremiah. I'm not advocating stalking any of our guests, but following, subscribing to their channels on YouTube and, you know, other places. Absolutely. But just something as basic as which drones to buy, you know, that's such a common question of which drone should I buy if I just want to get started? Well, this kind of brings our conversation full circle. In the very beginning, we were talking about all the different things that you can do with, as a drone service provider. You can make very pretty pictures, very pretty videos, collect data, different types of data. And so what would your response be to the which drone should I buy if I'm just getting started?
I would say which drones, to be honest with you, the easiest drones to use that work with the most amount of apps are going to be a DJI drone. Like even just like a standard Mavic 3 Classic could work. But then if you're going to start and go towards more of the professional and commercial side of things, a proper drone would be like the Mavic 3 Enterprise, especially if you're going to start doing more 3D modeling, point cloud generations of photogrammetry. Moving towards those would work best. But even like older drones like Altels and things like that, you can pretty much start out with almost any drone. It more or less just falls on the apps that you can use to control those drones. And if they have apps that support the ability to do the missions that you need it to do, which is doesn't entirely answer the question, but more or less is you don't need to spend a ton of money to go out and start doing it. You can spend a little less money for a non-enterprise class drone still and still use apps to plan your missions and still use other ways to get the data. Because in the end, a photo is a photo, and more or less is you pay a lot more for the research and development that goes into developing the coding and software on the drone being able to plan and fly those missions than the hardware and drone itself. You can pay for a lot of research and development that goes into it. So you can definitely get by with using something like an Air 2S, but you would still need to look into applications and software that support specific missions that you're trying to fly. But the sky's kind of the limit when it comes to what you want and what you need. But as a start...
Sure, yeah, it's a lot of support, a lot of people out there who know how to use them, know how to work on them, know how to support those. Yeah. And Jeremiah, what's the balance here? How important are advanced piloting skills when becoming a serious drone service provider? Do you need to know how to do, any kind of flips or interesting maneuver, like aerial maneuvers or anything like that? Or are those much less important or important at all when it comes to taking good pictures, good videos, and or capturing high quality data? What level of importance would you place on pilot skills as a new drone service provider starts up?
It really depends what discipline you're going to go into. In general, the hardest thing you'll ever do in like aerial mapping and surveying are the calibration patterns that you need to fly before you start like a LiDAR mission and after LiDAR mission ends. And things like that are like going like forward and backward three times. But the hardest part that people generally need to practice with is just turning, coordinated turns where you have to use both sticks to make a nice smooth turn. But in terms of piloting skills when it comes to aerial mapping, a lot of that is just automated. Like you really don't have to touch the sticks to fly an automated mapping mission. But that also depends on your experience and your confidence level in how you plan your missions. So it's a lot of logistics, and it's a lot of looking at things on the outside and kind of thinking, in the end, when it comes to drones, it's what you see is what you get. So if you're standing in a place and you don't see it, you're not going to get that in your drone data. So in terms of pure piloting skills, when it comes to aerial surveying mapping, it's a little less needed. But when you start going towards the more inspections and public safety side of things, that's where you can't really rely on automated missions. You can't really rely on automatic a lot of things. And that's where you're going to end up taking full manual control or semi-manual control. And you still got to keep your eye on it. And you still got to make sure, you don't lose orientation and things like that. But like basic piloting skills are always necessary, and being able to calmly fly in a panic situation, because things always happen all the time. Like your drone with your $100,000 scanner might be doing a little weird thing up in the air and you don't like it, or it loses GPS, or it starts flying off in a weird direction. If you don't practice procedures on how to do with that, or you're flying it manually and you lose orientation and you don't know what to do to regain orientation, those are things that you would have to practice. It would be just more or less, at least in aerial surveying and mapping, what to do in an emergency situation if you lose GPS, if you lose something in that nature, because a lot of people just tend to freeze, and that's when things go wrong. In general, there are usually no issues, but I would say you need at least basic line of sight piloting skills, just at least to the extent that if it is out maybe a few hundred feet away, that you would be able to manually pilot that thing back to you and land it. So at least basic piloting skills, unless you're starting to go into like the aerial videography or FPV, those piloting skills, that is pure practice, and that is putting packs and packs of batteries in every single day and getting good at it. So depending on what you're doing, it just really depends on how much actual stick time you need. But I always recommend everyone picking up like a Tiny Whoop, those little tiny 65 millimeter drones, and learning how to fly with that. You can't really break anything with it. You can run it full steam into a person, they would barely feel it. But it is, they don't have GPS, they have accelerometers in them, but it's underpowered, and it is a fun enough drone to where you can fly it anywhere to practice your skills and just general piloting skills. So that's something I always recommend to like customers and people to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great advice. You know, you remind me of something that when we were interviewing the Drone U, we were talking with Paul and Rob over there, and something that Paul likes to preach on is that, you know, it's just like getting your Part 107. It's kind of like getting your driver's license. Just because you are legally allowed to drive a car does not mean that you're necessarily a good driver. Similarly, just because you've got your Part 107 does not necessarily mean you're a good drone pilot, and that honing those skills as a skilled driver, as a driver on the road and as a pilot in the sky, that's an ongoing, very important aspect of being a good driver and a good pilot. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, even just not even like getting a tiny drone, but just getting a sim, like downloading a sim and plugging your controller into it and learning basic skills flying. That's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah. Well, that would be so easy, yeah, because you're not burning through batteries that have, you know, a finite number of cycles on them that they can go through, and you're not risking breaking props or anything like that either. Yeah, a simulation like that would be great. Cool. Well, Jeremiah, I can't thank you enough for coming on today. It's been a really interesting conversation. You've got such a great vast experience here of working in the UAV industry with tons of different professionals in the industry, getting to know them, and now we've all been able to learn from you here, and it's been very, very interesting and just valuable. So really want to thank you for that, and highly recommend that everybody follow Jeremiah, and also follow and subscribe to this channel. If you do that, that helps us bring on more great guests like Jeremiah. So please make sure to follow and subscribe to the Concrete Conversations podcast. And we want to thank Jeremiah for coming on to the podcast today, and wish everyone a pleasant evening. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys.